Going here. Everybody say good morning.
Good morning.
We are live here at Big Life Community Church. There we go. We have been doing this for 9 weeks now through the book of Philippians. We have been reading through the book of Philippians almost verse by verse. And my hope is that this small piece of the Bible with just four chapters that you could read in like 20 minutes has been digested into your heart just a little bit more than it was 9 weeks ago. Somebody said we've spent more time in Philippians than Paul spent in Philippi, which might be true, but we have really soaked up the truth of this book. And my hope is that you've been able to take something, put it in your heart, and let it find a way to reorient the way you live, the way you face the world, the way that you walk with God every single day of the week. So we want to look here at the end of the book of Philippians, chapter 4. You have a Bible that's near you. I want you to turn with me to chapter 4 of Philippians. That's going to be around page 203, 204 in your Bible on your chair. We're going to read verses 10 and following. So if you have a Bible there, read with it. Philippians 4, chapter 4, verse 10. I was very glad in the Lord, because now at last you have shown concern for me again. Of course, you were always concerned, but you had no way to show it. I'm not saying this because I need anything, for I have learned how to be content in any circumstance. I know the experience of being in need and having more than enough. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every circumstance, whether full or hungry, or whether having plenty or being poor. I can endure all things through the power of the one who gives me strength. Still, you have done well to share my distress. It's good to be reminded of the context of this verse right here. Paul is not writing this from a beach house. Paul is not writing this from a Christian retreat. Paul sits down and writes these words in writes the letter of Philippians from prison. And this is not a prison where he has had his Miranda rights read to him, convicted by a jury of his peers. He is there at the hands of the government. He is there against his will, and his crime was simply living and sharing his faith. And so when Paul begins to express to the people in Philippi what he's going through, he is speaking from a place of great pain as well as a place of great faith. He says to them, it's really good that you finally showed concern for me again. Other times you didn't have a chance to be concerned, but now you do, and you did it. I read that opening sentence probably 50 times Monday and Tuesday of this week in preparation for this message. Paul says, I was glad in the Lord because now at last you've shown concern for me again. Of course you're always concerned, not that you had a way to show it. I was looking for like the sarcasm font of the second part of that sentence. I couldn't quite find it, and some of you, if you want to deem me a heretic biblically, that's just fine. You won't be the first, won't be the last. But Paul is saying here, you sent me a gift. The Philippian Christian sent Paul a gift, a way to bless him while he was in prison. And he said, I am so glad that you finally again have expressed some concern to me. Now, before you were concerned, but you couldn't do anything about it. But now you are, and now you did it. I got inside of this, and I prayed about this text, and I argued with this text, and I tried to let it teach me, and I want to admit that I'm above trying to bend it to get what I wanted to say. And I just kept coming back to this thing. Paul is not interested in your concern. He's interested in your concern that leads to action. It's great that you're concerned about me in prison, but now that you can help me, now that you can bless me, now that you can share with me, if you have the ability to be good to me while I am locked in a prison, I sure would appreciate it. Concern that's not expressed. Is it really concern? Paul says, you're concerned about me, but if you haven't done anything about it, what good is it? Now, which would Paul appreciate more? A church that's concerned about him, or a church that's concerned about him and sends him food? You know the answer to that, don't you? We know the answer to that. And so when Paul kicks off this last little section here, as he's kind of, this is almost the postscript. This is almost the, oh, by the way. He says, I really have gratitude for what you've given me and maybe it's about time you do it again. Paul is in that weird spot of having to lead them as well as be served by them. And he wants to raise their awareness beyond awareness and concern. And he wants to see them move to action to bless people in need. I'll never forget one of the most frustrating conversations I've had with our friend Chris Baker. He runs Inc. 180. I was sitting with him one day. We weren't frustrated in terms of I was disappointed in his choices of college football teams. That's not what it was. I was listening to his grief. He was sharing his grief with me about what he calls the invitation to raise awareness for human trafficking. He says that there are numerous groups that have asked him back 2 and 3 and 4 times to come, quote, raise awareness about human trafficking. Now, I got to say, it's important to know about human trafficking. What I knew about human trafficking in 2011 versus what I know now is night and day. Somebody invested in me and raised my awareness. Chris did that for me. But what his frustration was, is what you all understand. Once you know what's going on, you have the burden of doing something about it. Once you have this awareness of what is going on in this world, you must begin to do more than be concerned, but to put your concern into action. Let's just go ahead and be blunt here. Does a homeless person care about your concern or your concern that gives them a sandwich? We know the answer to this. Our veterans appreciate our patriotism and our support of them, but is that not better when it is translated into care for the injured when they return, mental services for those that have gone through things we will never understand? That concern, that care that is expressed in tangible ways that bless people. We talk about how much we appreciate our church. I have loved hearing the delight in the articulation of the energy that people feel about this congregation. Can you not feel how much different it's been the last couple months at Big Lock? I am so grateful for that. But that gratitude has got to be translated into service, into concern that has action and generosity and invitation. It's more than having a bumper sticker for Jesus. It's turning that concern into action. It's turning that attitude into a lifestyle. If your concern is not acted on, is it concern? This last summer we were having supper on the beach. It was about the perfect moment that you could have for a family. Marissa, Reese, Clive and I sitting at Joe's Crab Shack in Galveston Beach. It was amazing. Open air windows. They've got good steak. They've got good crab. They've got Shiner Bock on tap. Of course, I looked at it. I didn't have any. It was awesome. It was amazing. But one of the things that goes on in our family is somebody's got to speed eat because Clive will speed eat. And when Clive is done eating, Clive is done. Now, this restaurant is brilliant. They have a playground attached to the restaurant. This is thy kingdom come. This is in the Bible. If not, it should be. There is a playground attached to the restaurant. And so when I get done with my steak and Clive gets done with his French fries, he announces that he is done. And so I pick him up and we go out into the playground. This just covered with sand. It's like a sand playground and slides and swings and all of that. And my son just goes to town. He sits down. He lets the sand go through his hands. Comes down the slide once or twice. And he finds a spot where he sits. He's about 5 feet away from me. I'm on a bench. He's letting the sand go through his hands, go through his toes. It's just like this picturesque moment of the breeze off the Gulf. Little boy sits down next to him, maybe 6 or 7 years old. And the little boy begins to pick up the sand and run it through his hands. And then he begins to lift it up a little more. And then he begins to throw it. And then he begins to treat it like an Olympic sport as it goes up into the air right onto my son's head. And about the third time he did that, you know where you're like looking around for a parent? You're like, whose kid is it? Where's dad at? What these awful parents? Where are they? He didn't stop. And no parent was coming to do it. And so I said, now listen, buddy, you need to stop throwing the sand. And he turned and he looked at me. And he said, I'm not throwing it. I'm lifting it. I was like, excuse me? He's like, I'm lifting it. And he continued to, in his vocabulary, lift the sand into my son's hair. And that's when you're like, you know, I'm not moving my kid. Somebody better show up and move their kid or we're going to have some problems here. Finally, little dad came to the rescue and we had a little moment and he walked off. I talked behind his back. I did that. I just will admit it. But you know what he called it? Was lifting. And we all know that it was throwing. You can call it something else, but that doesn't mean it's what it is. We can call our concern, concern. We can sometimes call it a prayer request. We can sometimes call it lifting our ideas and trying to find a way to put it into action or waiting on a call. But at the end of the day, if our concern is not expressed with action, maybe we shouldn't call it concern. If you want to know what's on your heart, if you want to know where your faith is in action, just look at two things. Look at your calendar, what gets your time, and look at your bank statement of what gets your money. That is your concern expressed. I was up at Starbucks a couple weeks ago writing one of my sermons. I was at the Starbucks in Yorkville. It's amazing. I see as many people in Yorkville as I do in Oswego. We kind of got the border war here going on. We've got to keep people in there in McKendall County. That was a little funnier when I wrote it this morning. I'm there and I'm waiting in line to get my cup of coffee and sit down and work for 2 hours straight. And I see that there's a mom there, maybe 50, 55. And she has her son, who's maybe 25. And he clearly has some form of developmental delay. And he's energetic, and he's moving around, and his arms are flailing. And he speaks with a high, loud voice that's barely able to understand what he's saying. And you can tell that she is kind of at her wit's end, trying to have this moment with him in public. And it's frustrating for her, and he's not aware of what's going on. And I don't tell this story to make it sound like I get it right. I'm telling this story because it's so rare that I get it right. I felt this nudge from God. I felt this nudge from God that said, do something for her right now. And I could tell that she was trying to make her way to the door. So I did something I never... I asked two people if I could cut in front of them at Starbucks. And it's amazing that when you just say, hey, I need to cut in front of you, how passive people are. So they just said, sure. And so I cut in front of them, and I bought a $20 gift card for Starbucks for this woman. And I got it as fast as I could. And as she was making her way out the door, I just came over and I handed it to her. I just said, I wanted to give you this. And she didn't quite know what to do with it. She put it in her pocket. I could tell she was appreciative, and I could tell she was a little embarrassed. She made her way to the car, and I went back, and I didn't cut in line the second time. Got my cup of coffee, and I sat down. Two things happened that I've had a hard time describing, and I don't even know if I can put it into good words now. I felt this momentary explosion of joy. There is this explosion of joy that comes from following God's prompting to bless another person. There is an explosion of joy that comes from that. But then I almost felt this immediate spiritual crash that said to me, why is it so rare? Why is this so rare? Why is this a one-time thing? I mean, I wish I could tell you I had a great story like that to tell every week where I put myself in a good light and followed God, but it's not what happens. There was this momentary explosion of joy and then an almost... a reversion to the mean of inconsistency, of listening to God, of inconsistency, of generosity. Momentary joy followed by inconsistency is how I describe myself when it comes to following through on the concerns I have for others. I don't know how you would describe yourself, but I see myself as such an example of inconsistency, of such an example of sometimes hypocrisy. When God daily calls us to express what we are concerned about through tangible action. Years ago, I was on the phone interviewing for a church. It was long before here. Don't freak out, everybody. I was interviewing for a job years ago with a church in Indiana. And I was on the phone with them and I asked them, what are you most excited about what your church has done in the last year? And they said, we had a Thanksgiving meal. This was like late spring. They said, we had a Thanksgiving meal where we invited the whole community to come for a free meal. Now, we didn't say, if you don't have any, if you're poor, come here. But we wanted people that didn't have anything to eat to come eat. And we didn't say, if you're lonely, come be with people, even though we wanted people that were lonely to come. They said they just went out of the way to throw open the doors and advertise a free meal on Thanksgiving for those that wanted to share a feast with others. And this church that had about 100 people on a Sunday morning had over 350 people that came for this meal on Thanksgiving. And folks that had never been together sat down and ate together. People that would never interact sat down and prayed together. And it was this moment of great joy to hear them articulate what they had done. And so it was 6-7 months later when they were describing this to me over the phone. And I said, well, what have you done since then? Well, we started planning for next Thanksgiving. I was like, well, any of those people that you met, did you get to know them and invite them back? Well, we didn't think about that. That family that you knew was hungry, did somebody follow up a week later and see what else they might need to maybe get back up on their feet? I said, no, we started planning for next year's meal. I know church, and I know that everybody that set that feast out that day was just elated. There was an explosion of joy in seeing that many people come together and feast in the name of Christ. But I also know that we can live off the fumes of one-time obedience and miss the daily calling that God has for us to express concern. Consistency is the difference between sentimentality and transformation. Consistency is the difference between sentimentality and transformation. One of the podcasts I listen to a lot of stuff so I don't have to listen to sports radio. I listened to a podcast called Freakonomics. Anybody familiar with Freakonomics? Yeah. Great, great podcast. And they were talking about some studies they were kind of leaping off of that book by Malcolm Gladwell, The Tipping Point. They were talking about what percentage of people in a community, especially a micro community, need to take up a habit or a conviction or a behavior. What percentage of people will generate what they call a tipping point to where it becomes the norm now, to where everybody will do it. And I've done church life all my life, and I've always kind of thought, man, if we could get like 50% of the people to do something, the next 50 will kind of come along. Their study said this, and let this sink in. If 10% of a community engage in a repetitive habit, it will become the norm within a year. I was kind of blown away by that. They said if 10% of people engaged in a habit, it would become normative within a year. Think about that for Big Life. Think about that for your life. What if 10% of our congregation woke up concerned about blessing the marginalized and the poor? What if 10% of our church had a habit of standing and supporting with prayer, with money, with concern, with volunteerism for those that were in need? Imagine what 10% could do for the other 90%. Imagine if 10% of us prayed daily for our neighbors and our friends that don't know the reconciling love of Jesus Christ. If 10% of us were people of prayer and invitation for the rest of our community, that 10% could bring the rest of the 90% along. Imagine if 10% of our congregation were generous in the form of tithing. If we got to 10% of our congregation that did that, it would bring everybody else along. It would become a norm, and it would transform this congregation. And what if 10% of us came to worship every Sunday and said, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to talk to God, and I'm going to talk to somebody I don't know. If we did those two things, but just a handful of us, it has a tipping point that can bring change to anything. That consistency is available to you. That consistency is available to all of us. Look at these last words here that Paul uses. Verse 11, I'm not saying this because I need anything, for I have learned to be content in any circumstance. It's crazy to say, but I think it's actually true. People that are most content with themselves are those that find themselves most focused on others. Those who are most content with themselves find a way to be content and bless others. Every story I tell is true, but I can't vouch for this one. So I just want to get on, I want to make this one clear. Don't quote me on this one. There's no Wikipedia footnote to it. I met Brian when I was in graduate school. Brian was a gruff, hard, around the edges man. He was a rough man that grew up in an orphanage. He grew up without his parents. He was adopted early in his teens. Frustrated childhood. Brian ended up going to college, in his own words, barely. And then found his great love, which was coaching football. Brian was the head coach at All Saints Football, where I was assistant to assistant to assistant coach when I was in seminary. My job was to follow Brian up and down the sidelines and make sure he had enough Copenhagen for each timeout. That should tell you where I'm at on the flowchart. I was sitting in his office one day, and he was telling me about his difficult childhood. And he said his parents that adopted him also adopted a child the day he was born that later had many developmental delays and needs that he said were a great stress and a great burden to their family. Brian said one morning he was sitting there eating breakfast, and his younger brother John, who had not spoken one word for the first 7 years of his life, sat down at the breakfast table with them. And John did what he did every day. He took his oatmeal, and he took a bite, and then he did something different. Said he put down the spoon, and he looked up, cleared his throat. "Oatmeal's really cold today, Dad." Said the first time in 7 years he'd ever said anything. And the first response was, "The oatmeal's cold." And of course, Mom starts weeping and crying. He comes in and says, What? Can you talk?" He's like, "Yeah, I can talk." "Why haven't you said anything?" "Up until now, everything's been pretty good." I know that's not true. I know that Brian was pulling my leg when he told that story, but he swore to this day that that story is accurate. And I still talk to him every couple of years. I'm like, "Is that true?" "Oh yeah, it's true, Jeff. Just like I saw it. That was true." The most absurd statement in that story is not that he talked for the first time in 7 years. The most absurd statement in that story is his belief that everything was good up for the first 7 years of his life. Don't you desire that contentment? Don't you desire that peace, that contentment that comes from knowing God and being at peace with God, yourself, and other people? Well, I want you to know that contentment is not a realization that you have enough. It's realizing that God is enough. That his love is enough, that his grace is enough, that his provision is enough for your life. And once you find yourself at peace with God and yourself and others, you will find the unlimited capacity that you have to show concern for other people in a most imaginable ways. There's so much to be done in this world. There's so much to be done in Oswego. There's so much to be done through this church and in this church. And the first step is realizing all that God has done for us already. So the first step to putting our faith into action and expressing that concern is knowing we already have all we need. And God has equipped us to now do that for others. Let's pray together.